referee is reaching into their pocket. What's it going to be, John? Oh, it's an autograph book to get Gareth Bale's autograph and a red card. Oh, the combo. You hate to see it. That can only mean one thing, though. It's time for the Get Off My Pitch podcast. My name is Eric Paisley, and with me tonight is...
John Brennig.
On tonight's episode, John and I will be talking about the mixed bag of results this week, where the boys in gold got to steal a win from Seattle 1-0, but dropped a match versus LAFC 1-2. John and I have learned a lot over the last week. We're going to talk about it. I now know John's official job title. That's a big deal. And John knows how I feel about hybrid cars and the public EV charger at Publix in Green Hills. And we're also going to be talking about our gut reaction to the last two games. We're going to talk about the hardest working player, MVP. You know the rundown. We're going to talk about some uncomfortable questions. This one's going to be a bit spicy, I think. I think it's going to be a little spicy. And, of course, we'll tell you who or what needs to get off our pitch. John, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
Good. Much less tired than last weekend. Mm. Didn't just, you know, freshly move and all that jazz. Still not unpacked but it's better. Better.
Awesome. Are you drinking anything special tonight? Because I'm just doing water tonight.
I'm drinking some bourbon because it sounded good.
Yeah, good for you.
Not really driven by results, just wanted some bourbon.
All right, John, let's talk about the game. Gut reaction to the matches, just so we can get the ball rolling here. The match against Seattle, what can you remember what was our prediction against the odds here?
I think you and I, we went with a 2-0, 2-1, something like that, somewhere we were both kind of optimistic about a win. And, you know, gut reaction, we were right with the result, wrong with the score line.
Yeah, and I feel like there was at least a couple of chances that could have easily made it a 3-0 or 2-0 game.
Yeah.
I think we were much more in the driver's seat in that match.
Yeah, but it was a lot like the first game against Seattle, where it was very cagey.
Yeah,
there was not a lot of free-flowing, beautiful soccer.
It was, as we were talking about after the match last night, it was not the typical beautiful game, right? It was a tactical game. Gary, I think, after the match, did sum it up quite nicely, where he was proud of the team for playing very tactically and playing smart soccer, which is Gary speak for playing the way he wanted them to play. But the results speak for themselves. We got the win and definitely needed to get back on the right track. Let's talk about the match against LA, which obviously I think has a lot more of a narrative to it and a lot more interest to it. And that is the introduction of Chiellini and Gareth Bale to the match. And Gary, after the match, said some very interesting things where, he felt like there may have been some psychology in the team leading up to that. Because everyone, I mean, these guys know, just as like we do, who's going to be on the other side of the ball, yeah. Right? And he wondered aloud, probably in the press conference, maybe too candidly, whether that played some role in mental mistakes that were made. I say all that to share my thought. My gut reaction is I felt like we were in the game very much through the first half, but second half, it was obvious psychologically, the boys just mentally were just making some atypically bad mistakes, which obviously led to some bad giveaways and one that went against us. How did you feel about the match? I know that we talked quite a bit, but how did you feel?
I mean, first of all, I think we both mentioned it was an entertaining game. It was much more fun and exciting. I agree. We felt very evenly matched in the first half. We had some opportunities that didn't go in. Obviously, we got the penalty, came in level. It did seem like the goal in the second half was definitely a little bit of a mental lapse, whether we weren't quite ready back on the field, organized, whatever it was that I'm sure you could point to some different things, but it definitely seemed like one of those, like we've done before, where we've scored a goal and then someone scored against us in the next couple minutes. We just weren't quite just back at it, back sharp 100%. While I agree with some of the mentality, I also do think that as it wore on, you saw some of the tiredness and the slight disparity in the quality of LAFC subs versus our subs because you know, again, obviously subbing on Bale, he's a starter. That's a little bit special. But I mean, even then, Blessing A few others they brought on were quality players, you know, that went out there and did that. We had, you know, we were bringing on Teal and Ake trying to, you know, down a goal, trying to salvage one back. And while we put up some good efforts, the last 10 minutes we pressed hard, you know, it just kind of seemed like, you know, both teams starting lineups, switch out five subs, they just had better quality there. And it was really hard for us to try and get that goal back. So,
yeah, a little nuance to that. There's a little more nuance to that, I think, that Gary felt like the boys were in good shape. They had good legs. Mm-hmm. He actually felt like the mental part of it played a bigger role. Mm, and I think there's evidence to support that in some of the snapping at each other that happened that we visibly saw. That mm-hmm. doesn't often show up on television or TV broadcast, but when you're right there and it's 10, 15 feet away from you and two players are snapping at each other because, you know, a pass got missed or something, you're like, I feel like that there's mentally tired combined, maybe like you said, with some physical tiredness, but I think mentally the guys were just not in the right headspace. And I feel like the frustration was growing because I know this has become a common theme, and maybe we talk about it too much, John, but it seems like the refereeing was definitely against us again.
I mean, watching a one-handed someone go up for an aerial duel against Gareth Bale with one hand on his back and get a foul called, whereas people were double-handed shoving CJ to the ground and not getting calls, was extremely frustrating. And again, I feel like CJ was in, you know, we've talked about Hani not getting calls because there might be a flop reputation, you know, whatever that is. I feel like CJ was unfairly targeted with that in this game, and maybe he has been, now that I look back the last couple, with a pattern where, you know, I remember we spouted off he wins like 90% of aerial duels. There was some stat, you know, floating around Twitter a couple weeks ago. He still does a great job of that, but it seems like when he's losing them, it's usually because he's being fouled, and a lot of those don't seem to be called. I mean, when he went down in the box, we were upset. I don't think anyone really there saw the hold, the shirt pull. You know what I mean? Obviously, it did result in the penalty, but it was quick. But, you know, I think I saw it and I was like, oh man, they fouled him again and it wasn't called. Like
Jamie saw it.
I just expected
Jamie on the
that.
Broadcast saw it. If you watch the highlights, I was surprised that because you and I, and it was weird because we were even on the side where it happened, but it happened so fast. I didn't catch it. Maybe your eyes were better, but Jamie caught it on the broadcast, which was, I thought that, I mean, we all love Jamie, but I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, it was. But I'm just saying, like, I feel like the attitude I have, like, oh, just another foul on CJ that's not called. I feel like that's becoming a recurring theme, whether it's the refereeing or not, or again, he's getting a reputation of that. But it does, there is some frustration, I feel like, building on that. And, you know, he's gone goalless for a couple games. So I feel like, you know, CJ's in a rough patch with that.
I want to talk about that. So this is a perfect segue into the hardest working player, because I want to build off that. My hardest working player for the Seattle match was CJ. And it's because of that he was working so hard, not so much in work rate, but just in the aerial duels and being much more of a physical presence, getting fouled constantly and not getting called. He got my hardest working player for the match. Now, I know that Leal could have easily, in fact, a lot of them, our midfield, could have taken that. Results vary, you know, your mileage will vary, but I feel like CJ's play in Seattle was the difference maker, even though it didn't directly, maybe didn't always directly set up one of those classic Hani Mukhtar goals. It did at least one, and it was, you know, it was a beautifully executed play that we needed to happen. It needed to happen, and I think that CJ gets my hardest working player.
Cool. I think that's a good one. I think I'm going to give mine to Dax, because I think his leadership in that game, and again, you talk about the midfield, was really, it's funny because I know you and I talked about, he didn't have the best game against LAFC. No. Looking back and watching against Seattle, he had a good game. He played well. And again, he also played the full game because, you know, that we swapped, you know, Sean went off, you know, and then Nungwa came on later, but Dax stayed on through the whole thing. It, just looking at the difference in the two games, you can see like the good Dax when he's on, when things go well and he's able to pass and use his little, you know, little ball trickery to kind of get out of bad situations versus when it just wasn't working and he was a step behind in LAFC. So to me, it made that contrast even more, and how critical having a good game from Dax can be. And I think that's what helped drive us in Seattle, because again, we've talked about our midfield being, you know, people just run up the middle and go through that. Seattle had a lot of trouble with that. They did not succeed on just blasting the midfield. They did have some success in the wings. And, you know, Jordan Morris made a couple good runs and a few others. But I thought our midfield played really well against that. So that's why I'll give it to Dax.
I know this isn't this is not a Seattle Sounders podcast. And we really don't make a habit of, like, breaking down the other team. But I was getting frustrated if I were a Seattle fan because Jordan Morris was wasted in that game. He is much more of a physical presence. And he was if he wanted to, he was definitely more than a match for Hani. And he was more than a match for CJ. Like, if he wanted to come back and, dispossess us. But it didn't seem like they wanted him to do that. And I you know, I wonder if that's Schmetzer, is it Schmetzer? What's his name?
Yeah.
I think it's Schmetzer.
I believe you're correct.
Yeah. He looks like an insurance salesman. I don't think that he wants Jordan. He wants maybe Jordan up there by himself. And I think that that frustrates Jordan too. I think he gets frustrated with that because he's much more of like a Leal. He wants to really range around and use that body, use that skill. And I'm not even the biggest Jordan Morris fan, but I felt like watching the game live, I felt like he was getting frustrated with the way
he was nigh invisible. His name really didn't get, not that you could hear the broadcast in the stadium, but his name did not really get called. He was silent, which is uncharacteristic.
What about your MVP for the Seattle game? I think we both agree, but
I mean, it's got to be Randall. I mean, that four touch segment from his one touch to intercept, one touch to pass, CJ's one touch pass, Hani's immediate shot was just one of the most beautifully constructed things that we have done as a team. Like, it was perfect pinpoint passing, but I'm not giving to him just for that because Randall also put an effort. Like you talked about midfield, you could have given him hardest working because he was doing a lot of work. And again, I think we saw in that game, and what I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute about LAFC, he's been given more freedom to kind of roam between the sides and in the midfield to try and help connect the forward play with the midfield. And I think you've seen that it's resulted in him working harder and running more. So he is exerting more effort, but I think we're reaping rewards from that and it looks good when it works. So I give it to Randall because I think he was – I mean, without him, that – I don't think – you know, if he doesn't see that ball, we don't get that play. We get nothing. We had a couple other chances, but could end up tied, so.
Well, it's clear without Randall Leal on the field against Seattle, that was a 0-0 draw at best.
Yes, yes, I think so.
We had more – we have more chances with him on the pitch than not. Do you think he should? Do you think he should be more classic Leal, where he should shoot more, or do you think he's about right where he's at on his shot?
I think he's fine about right with the balance. He takes a couple shots, especially early in the game. I think he's found a good balance. I wouldn't mind if he shoots more, but I also feel like some of it. It seems like when we push forward, we're either in a big group or it's just a couple, you know, CJ Hani and Leal pulling forward. And so I feel like he's usually pretty good at seeing the pass of like, I've got CJ, I've got something open, or they're both covered as well. So I'm just going to, you know, take the shot, or he knows, you know, the numbers aren't coming. I'm just going to give it a whack and see what happens. I think he's found a good balance with it, but I wouldn't mind if he shot more in some of those situations. Cause there were a couple times and cause it's more fresh in my mind, I think the LAFC game where he forays forward, Hani and CJ are kind of in there with the defender, so there's not a clear pass. And so then we end up just kind of back pass sideways cycle and we do our thing into our less productive crosses and you know, back passing there. And I almost wish he'd just go down and shoot and maybe it ricochets and something happens. So I'm happy with his balance because he did shoot a lot more in 2020, not necessarily to his benefit. But
I didn't hate it, though.
You know, he could, I didn't hate it. Yeah, but he could shoot more.
So
who is your MVP, by the way, just to say, I'm sure.
Well, I actually gave it to Mukhtar because I feel like, I feel like his, Mukhtar's positive energy and positivity and positive, like always moving forward, always going forward, kept the pressure on Seattle. So while the disposition from Leal was nice, he also had some, giveaways too. So in balance, I think I still gave it to Hani. Not a popular opinion, obviously. Like I said, I could have given hardest working to Leal because, you know, win, lose, or draw in possession, he was still running his butt off, right? So work rate wise, he's definitely higher. I want to go back to what you said. Then I want to go back to what you said about Hani about Leal shooting. Do you think, because you and I had a really nice conversation about the absence of a Godoy in the midfield. I think it's glaring that Godoy adds something in that midfield that we lack with our other players, which is the threat to take the ball up the middle and just take a shot, right? And it seems like maybe if Leal would be more of a threat to scoring threat, it would be more pull those defenders off of Hani, because they're triple, quadruple teaming him, because they're no one else is going to have a shot, or if they do, it won't be that bad.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it near the end of the game where he ran into a wall of four people, and he got the foul for that. But there are other times Hani ran into a wall of two people and just got dispossessed because they knew, hey, we just got to stop this guy, and the counterattack or the positive effort's over. I agree in that case. I would like to see more of that, but I think that's what watching Randall back the last couple of games made me realize how much we missed him with that. And then not having Godoy, because I think Godoy balanced some of that. I think seeing him makes me realize how key they both are to are progressing the ball down the field and not just passing, because they can both dribble, they take on guys, they make runs. Everything else, it feels like all of our other players, it's built on a couple touches and pass, couple touch, pass. It's like they got a counter, like, I've touched it three times, I need to pass it to someone. Whereas Randall he'll go down the field. Obviously, Hani will too, but he usually doesn't get the chance to do it because he's either receiving the pass on the end or, like we talked about, he's going to get converged on by three people because they know what this man can do and they want to stop him.
They don't want that step up. When he gets that step over going, it makes you look stupid, and nobody wants that. And speaking of looking stupid, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about some uncomfortable questions, soccer-related questions, and of course, who or what needs to get off our pitch, so stick with us. And we are back. Okay, John, time for some uncomfortable questions. It sounded like from our text exchange today that you may have a good one, so why don't you kick us off tonight?
Oh, I'm violating the rules all over again because this is what I like to do in this segment. I have a hypothetical that leads to my uncomfortable question and/or possibly an uncomfortable
question. So, is it a hypothetical question that leads to it?
Hypothetical question. Okay. Yes. Hypothetical question. So, this year, we've talked about we have three areas of weakness: right back, midfield, striker. And not necessarily weakness or places to be improved, and we've talked about that.
I think there's a hierarchy there, right? There's a hierarchy of needs there, right? The right back being the highest. Yeah.
So, let's concentrate on right back, midfield. This year we have sold Alistair Johnson. We acquired Sean Davis. We had Whelan Miller, and we've now acquired Shaq Moore. So that's where we are now. Hypothetically, beginning of the year, I give you two. So you can take that option where Nashville is now, what we've done. Option two, keep AJ, sign Acosta. Option three, keep AJ and sign Areola. Which option do you take, sir?
Oh, that's tough. I go Acosta because Acosta has more of an even temper. Areola can fly off the handle. And it's only because we don't need another Dax McCarty hothead on the field. I want someone who's a little more, a little more mature. And it's not even that, you don't even see it at Dallas. But in D.C., if DC got behind or out of sorts or off pace, Areola would just really kind of lose his game mentality. He's kind of like Alex in that regard, where he loses his game focus. It's not even like he flies off the handle. That's not what I'm talking about. He seems to lose his game focus. Acosta he's like nerves of steel, man. I've seen Mexican players quadruple screaming in his ear, God knows what. And he's just whatever, man. So I'll take Acosta. I know that maybe it's because of I'm primed because of just recent stuff, but I'll take Acosta. I'll take option two with Acosta, please.
All right. So given that, do you think we would be in a better position if we had kept AJ and signed Acosta than we are right now?
Well, so there are two – that variable has two denominators that – I don't know. That equation has two parts to it that are tricky. One is that Eric Miller is an offensive he's not as offensive. Liability. Yeah, he's not as offensive as he could be, but he's not as much as a defensive liability as we think he is. He is actually better on defense than we just get angry because he's passing the ball back. But honestly, he's made some key defensive stops. Mm-hmm. Does he do them all the time? No, but he is young. I mean, come on. He is relatively young. Did AJ always, do great back there? Not really. I mean, we think of him, but he was more of a complete box-to-box player. He knew what the heck to do with the ball once he got past midfield. Eric has still no clue what to do. His crosses are garbage. So it is frustrating. So that's one equation. The other one is, midfielders tend to – it seems to be more of a chemistry with midfielders, much like when you get up in each of the attacking mid and defensive zones. There seemed to be a chemistry there. So I don't know how that would have worked out. So would we be better? I say no. I say we probably would be in the same position we are now, but we wouldn't hate Eric Miller. Like, there wouldn't be as much, like, online vitriol. Like, I think we would be a little more AJ would still carry the day as a fan favorite, and Acosta would still be, like a Sean Davis. He'd be like, okay, he's steady back there. Maybe he needs more playing time. Maybe he needs this. Maybe he needs, like, we wouldn't be, like, no one hates Sean Davis. Like, no one's like, oh, pull Sean Davis. Like, no one's saying that.
Well, so just to throw this back, I looked up some stats. So if we did Acosta and AJ combined, they combined have 2 goals and 3 assists. Sean and Wheel, because Eric has none of those, have a combined 3 goals and 2 assists. So not too bad, about even there, if we assume that, and that, we're not signing Shaq.
Yeah, but AJ's in the East. But AJ's in the East, but Acosta's in the West. I don't know. Yeah,
But my biggest thing is I feel like AJ had both the flexibility to play in the 4-4-2 and be part of the back four, or to be a wing back in a back three with Romney, Mayer, Zimmerman, and he would play in Wheel spots, which could free Wheel up to play in other places and other things. So I feel like that was the one advantage, is we had more versatility in one player and what he could do. Fun fact, though, of all of them, Ariola has 9 goals and 2 assists. So if you're going bang for the buck for some goals, that, there he is. But I agree. I don't know if he was a fit. I just wanted to see what you would say, because there's all this talk. So it was just an interesting hypothetical to see, like, if you could have tinkered it differently and if we got here, what it might have been.
No, I couldn't have. And I try to avoid the Ariola thing because I am such a homer for DC. I don't want to come off that way. I want to make sure that I see those players' flaws just like I see my own team's flaws now, right? I saw back then, too. So
I also think that Ariola and Leal might have issues on the field, because I feel like they do a lot of similar things. So it would have been a little weird. So
they are both like, now, what really would have been an uncomfortable question for me is, would you have rather had Ariola over Leal? Now, that would have put me on the spot, man. That would have put me on. That would put me on the spot. I don't know. I'm not going to answer that question because you didn't ask it. All right. So it's time for.
That's okay.
It's my turn. do we need to bench Walker Zimmerman? Because we need some goals, man. What do we need to do? Here's the uncomfortable question. What do we need to do to get Walker Zimmerman some goals? How about that? Because I'm getting a little I'm getting a little frustrated.
I wasn't sure if you were asking me if Walker's the reason we're not getting goals.
No.
I mean, in particular, looking at the LA game, they had some legit defenders. Obviously, Chiellini has a large pedigree despite his age and, whatever. Walker, so for one thing, in this game, we saw him push downfield a couple offensive forays where he went forward because he said, I'm going to get in there with the cross, which is something we've seen him do before, but not a lot recently. I feel like it's been a month or so before we've seen him really do that. He's been in there on the set pieces trying to go for that. But again, everyone knows he's the target man, so they cover him harder. I think we can do more. To me, there's one of two things. If we want to score goals for Nashville overall, we can do one of two things. We could use him more as a dummy and bait, because everyone knows we want to go to Walker. We'll use that. Use he and CJ as a bait, do something else, get a little fancy, go away from him. Try to draw up some plays with that. That would be one option to leverage that. The other thing is, do better at getting him free. Allow him, you've seen some of those plays where, you know, sometimes it's kind of clump up sometimes and then they break up, you know, do things where he's easier to get lost in the mix. I feel like in looking at our plays, I know we did one where we kind of lined up with more guys on one side and Walker on the one side, but he was covered well. There was one guy, you know, man marking him and another one floating nearby. So it didn't really work out. I don't know that it's necessarily a problem, but I think we could do more to get him involved. I think drawing up the set plays and changing that. The other thing to be said is I like what he did in the LA game. I like him going forward, being in the box for those situations, but it's hard because there was one breakaway where they pushed, nothing resulted from it because they had a bad pass and things fell apart, where, you know, that becomes a liability, especially in that game where Romney wasn't there, who we usually have, you know, those back three. We had just Jack and Dax all of a sudden was our center back there. So I would like to see us do more, but I don't know that it's necessarily a problem. I think it's more of a statement of I think you look at his stats and see the lack of goals, and that's just a statement of the issue with our spot kicks, our free kicks, our corners in general. You know what I mean? It's a statement of the whole thing. It's not an indictment of him, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I think we are trying to do stuff to get him the ball, to get him free, to set up plays for him. And I think people just know how to defend it and know what to expect.
Yeah. I think it's well said. I know that we had talked about why is Dave Romney not on the pitch? And during
the second game in a row.
Yeah, during the presser, Gary said something very cryptic, which led me to believe that something in Romney's play is actually keeping him. He's not injured. So I was shocked by that. I wanted to kind of make that my uncomfortable question, but I don't know enough about the situation. I don't know. Maybe Romney has had a bad game, but if I look at the stats, or let's just talk numbers. Yeah. Romney is still our third scorer. He's got two goals. I'm just saying he has two goals. Zimmerman has zero goals.
No.
So I'm not sure what's going on there, but you know, Gary may know more than I do. So I kind of want to always leave space for that. All right, John, let's give the people what they want. Let's tell people who or what needs to get off our pitch. You kicked us off on the uncomfortable question. So kick us off on who or what needs to get off our pitch. What is it, John?
Old Italian players. Oh man, no. I mean, I respect Cellini for doing what he's doing, but you know, it's fun. He's an easy target to make fun of.
Oh yeah,
you know. No, I my get off my pitch is for people who think that charging stations are just for those with special cars as opposed to the first people who show up. Look, listen to me. If I have a hybrid vehicle, I'm using gas if I run out of juice. Whereas if I fill that up, I'm now using electric vehicle miles to get around. You already have planned for electric vehicle miles. You know you have enough to get there. You know you have enough to get back, and you'll just have to charge longer when you get home. I don't know. I know that I'm going to get part of the way there, most of the way there on electrical miles, and then I'm going to use gas on the way back. So it's better for the environment, Eric. So get off my pitch, Eric, to you for calling me out about the use of use of free chargers at grocery stores in bougie Green Hills.
That's okay. Right. For the for friends of the pod and for the folks at home who play the home game of Gomp, John is referring to a what I thought would be a private conversation between he and I driving to the stadium about the etiquette around using EV charging stations. I contend that EV charging stations are for EVs, not hybrids, right? Because I don't pull up to a gas station and block a pump. Why are you pulling?
Not equivalent, Eric.
Not equivalent. Yeah, false equivalency. Let's talk about some fallacies. All right. Here's my get off the pitch, and it's a pretty straightforward one. Wednesday night after the match, some sort of sewer line or something broke at the bottom of that stanky hill at the stadium, and water just flooded the entire bottom half as you walk from that giant hill to the lot 8. And it stank.
I wasn't aware because I exited north.
Yeah, and so it stank. I went, you know, and it ruined my shoes. Like, it didn't ruin my shoes, but it my favorite shoes. My daughter had to walk up the hill and around. So my red card is for still having to walk through that like narrow little gap to get to the one lot that I hate parking in anyway. So my red card is for, I don't know whoever designed this nonsense, but come on, guys. Come on. Seriously. Now, luckily they'd fixed it for Sunday's game. But Wednesday, we were all like, this water smells kind of funny.
Is this water brown?
Yeah. I'm not, I think it was like gray water. It's not, I don't think it was like, you know, like sewered, but it stank.
Well, and while we're talking about it, we should give a bonus red card to everyone who decided to leave early and not stay for the Special Olympics Unified Team game afterward, because that was amazing. I just want to shout out and say so it was an amazing experience. The kids had fun. It was an entertaining 20 minutes, 2 10-minute halves. It was a score 8-7, 9-7, I think. It was a heck of a game to watch, and it was a great atmosphere. I just want to shout it out for anyone who wasn't there. If they ever do it again, absolutely stay for that. It was worth it. I realize it started at 9:30 on a Sunday night, but it was pretty cool. So.
Totally worth it. I had a blast. I'm glad that we decided to stay. I'm glad you convinced me to stay. You know, because I'm old and grouchy and cynical, and so it gets past 9 o'clock and I get all. But I stayed. I had a blast. It was genuinely fun to watch them have fun, and that's something people need to realize that a lot of these programs that are put together for these folks, it means a lot to them, and it's infectious. Mm-hmm. Give it a chance. Once you see how much they love it, you kind of get into it. And the fact that the club did all the things for them, they did a walkout.
The whole thing, the lineup, a walkout, a warm-up, the halftime, they played the goal song every time. We stood up and sang the anthem for them at the end. It was amazing.
Yeah, and so shout-out to the back line led by one Steven Robinson, who stayed after and sang his heart out. He sang just as hard for them as he did for the other boys in gold, the other team.
Yep.
And hats off, hat tip to all the backline supporters for doing your job, for doing a good job, for going above and beyond. Yep. It was a lot of fun, and we were having fun in the stands. Like everyone was having a blast. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a good time.
All right, we're going to take a break. That's a nice positive thing. So we're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to preview our next match, which this one's going to be a good one. Oh, yeah. We're going to tell you what we got wrong from last week, so stay with us. And we are back. All right, John, before we get into our next section, how can people give us feedback on the internet related to the content that we create? What's one of the mechanisms reach us?
So the internet's a newfangled thing. It's a series of tubes, and you use a dial-up. No, I'm just kidding. Yes, so if you want to find us... I do still love that sound. It's got some nostalgia to it. No, if you want to find us, you can go to Twitter, @GOMP_pod, and you can... Shoot, tell us what we did wrong. Tell us what we did great. Call us ugly. I don't know. Just, you know, whatever you want. If you have opinions, we are here to listen to you. And hey, if you have any questions, we'll bring them up and talk about them on the podcast.
Yeah. So I did, again, this isn't a podcast about other podcasts, but I do want to, I did put out there to our friend of the pod, let's just call them Pod Adjacent, the pharmaceutical podcast. I did put the question out there to the boys, Clay LaSole. You know, a starting member of the Pharma Pod was seen on the pitch Sunday night waving the flag for another support group. I won't say who it was. Is he out on loan? So I was like, you need to confirm two things for us. Is he out on loan as a designated supporter? And what kind of GAM money did the pod get for that trade? So it's so far it's been silence from the front office at PharmaPod. So if they would like to respond, that's also something that's one of the mechanisms that they could do that. All right, so John, who are we playing Saturday? Who's
the Skyline Chili Champions of Cincinnati FC CF. I don't know.
Oh, there's an F in there.
Or as Matt Doyle called them once in MLS. Soccer.com, the pointy lions, because they have a little pointy sword. I thought that was cute and yet very demeaning at the same time.
That's pretty good. And I'm always cognizant that I do have a very close friend of mine who is both a Cincinnati supporter, a Cincinnati native. So I walk a fine line, but yeah, they can really go just, you know, kick rocks, as they say, as the youngins say now. Yeah, this one's going to be a rivalry game, and I think it's going to work out to where John and I will be able to watch the match together as bros, and that is going to be a lot of fun.
It should be.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm looking forward. So let's break down the match here. So we got a little bit of time here. How are Cincinnati looking coming into this game?
That's the interesting thing. You asked this a couple weeks ago. And it's a very different result. Okay. Cincinnati was on a tear. They had some great games. Their form in the last five is four draws and a loss.
Yeah.
They have been on the schneid, as sports people like to say. So things have not been going well. They were up to, I think, fourth at one point, maybe pending a game result, and they've been slid down. Now they're at seventh, and they're 1 point, you know, out of the playoff line with the silent eyes of Charlotte, of all people. So they've been on the slide, and here's the thing. Due to an incident in the prior, well, two games ago, Lucian Acosta, who's one of their main players, their attacking midfielder and their primary creator, their number 10, was suspended for this previous game the weekend, which they drew, and is also suspended for the game that Nashville is visiting. So they are going to be down one of their key players. Not quite, I think, pivotal, as we'd say, maybe missing Hani, but definitely, you know, missing something equivalent. So that being said, I still want to beat the piss out of them.
Oh yeah,
I want 5-0. That's what I'm going for here.
Yeah, my heart. When he went from DC to Cincinnati, I that really hurt me. I really was very disappointed, and the fact that he didn't even want to be there. Remember, he did ask for a trade after the first year he was there. He wanted to go overseas, and then he was, you know, slated to go to Newcastle, and that fell through, and. You know, that broke my, I felt bad about that. And then there was a green card issue and then COVID. It just, like, things really stuck against him. And so I'm not sure where he's at mentally now in Cincinnati, but he is very much like a Ronda Leal. I don't know if the Costa Rican Athletic Association just pumps out these guys, but they are they're almost exactly alike in style and in intensity and in play. They're almost exactly alike. They could be a like-for-like trade. I think that us going into this game, I feel like we are going to be really primed to beat the snot out of them. I think there's some frustration there may be some frustration boiling over in this game too. So,
yeah,
you know, I would not,
I could,
yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Don't go ahead. You say it first.
I won't rule out a red card in this game, at least one or maybe two.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely think there will be cards, and not just cards from tackles, but cards from follow-up and join. I mean, this is, you know, if you look at the way Nashville has played in our natural rivals, geographic and in the Eastern Conference, obviously Atlanta's been it because they've been the big behemoth and stuff. They came and did all that. Atlanta's one of them. Orlando's been kind of that one that all the games play like a rival, even though a lot of people, I don't think either club really views them as a top rival. Mm-hmm. But Cincinnati, it's always been that one because they, you know, talked all the big talk when they were going up a year ahead of us in the USL and beat us in the USL playoffs. And you know, I feel like everyone on the team knows it, cares about it, and takes it personally. Like the fans, we all care. We want to beat Cincy. I think they know it too. I wouldn't be surprised if this could get a little chippy. I also will not be surprised if there are goals, because that is one thing Cincinnati has done well. They have scored goals. They have also let in a lot of goals.
Yeah.
We haven't scored as many. We've scored some, but we've also let in a little bit too. So I would not be surprised if there are, you know, four or five goals in this game, maybe more.
Okay. What's your score? What's your score line for the game?
I'm going 5-0 because I'm optimistic. I want to shellack them. I want to feel good and walk away, and then we can – you know, give everyone like an extra rest day before we go on to the next game. That's kind of what I want to see. So
my instinct tells me it's a 3-3 game and we get robbed by two goals. We get one call back from VAR and we get one call back from offside.
Okay.
Technically it's a 5-3 game, but I feel like this has become a habit, or this is some sort of, it's going to start right here, a conspiracy theory Like, we are getting so screwed on calls, yeah. especially when we're on away games. I just really am sick of it. And I,
yeah.
So cynical Eric says 3-3, optimistic Eric says 4-3.
All right.
I know that's.
I think we'll be somewhere in between the two, but yeah. it'll be fun to watch.
It won't be a zero.
At the very least, it will not be a 0-0 game. And at the very least, it should look like this LAFC game where there's a lot of back and forth. There's some close opportunities, a couple crossbar hits, some good saves. Like, we're going to look at a lot of stuff, which, by the way, shout out to Joe for the save in the Seattle game that we didn't even mention in all of our stuff.
We didn't even mention it, did we?
Stunning. No, and it saved our butts.
VAR. Anyway, so that's that's a good segue to VAR. That's a good, that's a perfect segue to VAR. That goal, that non-goal, and I didn't see it. So VAR to my daughter, Brenna, who actually saw him touch the ball. I didn't see it because I'm old and I can't see that well. So she saw it. She was like, oh my God. And she's like grabbing my shirt. And I'm like, what? It just went off the bar. She's like, no, I think he touched it. I'm like, ah, you're crazy. You know, I gaslight my daughter all the time. I'm like, you're crazy. You don't know what you're talking about. No, I don't do that, folks. Please don't write it in the pod for that. But yeah, I was like, I didn't see what happened. She's like, oh, I think he actually got a hand on it. And she was right. I watched the video. And then I showed her the next day. You know, I showed her on my phone. I'm like, yeah, you were right. There was something else that happened in the Seattle game that really kind of saved our bacon, too. I think Eric Miller had a nice stop, too, that didn't get a highlight. But Joe's save made on the ESPN top 10. I was in the airport.
It was number six
number
or
six.
Seven, I heard? Yeah.
It was number six. I was in the Greenville bar. I was in a Greenville bar and I saw that. So I know that stay with me. This does make sense in context. But I now really hate Charlotte. I spent some time in Greenville, South Carolina. My daughter was visiting Clemson as a potential university. It's very close. It's basically between Atlanta and Charlotte. So just think of it like a between place between two metropolitan areas. But the one of the big cheeses or big money people in Greenville owns the Greenville, not the USL team, but there's a second, the tier below USL. What's his, it's the
MPSL.
Yeah. We used to call it the PSL, the player development or PDL. It's now called like USL 2 or something.
Yeah. Greenville Triumph.
He owns the Greenville Triumph. He
USL
also,
League One. Sorry. There you go. USL League One.
USL League One. So the Greenville Triumph, which I love that they have their own team store in downtown Greenville. It's amazing. It's actually really nice. I was kind of like, wow, this is a League Two team? Oh, okay. All right. Well, good for them. I found out from my my nephew that the guy that owns the Triumph actually owns part of the Charlotte. So he's part owner in both. And so there's a lot of people with Charlotte jerseys on downtown Greenville, too. It was starting to tick me off because I didn't bring any of my NSC gear because I was wearing all my Clemson stuff. So I officially don't like Charlotte now because I know we're going to see them a lot, you know, hopefully knock on wood next year. So
is that like a yellow card, like a half comp to Charlotte fans in Greenville? I feel like
we'll see. I think they combine, they combine the stupidity of a Cincinnati team that just got in the league with the arrogance of Atlanta. So you combine the two together and you get Charlotte. That's my experience.
Interesting.
All right. What else did we get wrong from last week, John? Any notes?
There was not much. The only thing I had is I know I specifically called out that I would VAR this of, you know, that we might see Bale play for the first time on U.S. soil in MLS. That is correct. He has played in some friendlies. So this was the first MLS game. So that was you know, properly qualifying his presence there. But I think that was all I had.
Yeah, I think I can VAR the fact that Chilani, I had painted him as a chain-smoking Eurotrash during the match. He is actually quite physically fit and does take care of himself. So apologies to Angelo Totoro, who does like him as a player. It's a thing. So, but I still think he's Eurotrash. All right, well, John, I think that's all for tonight. We're going to wrap it up, and we will talk next week when we are victorious after Cincinnati. So, my friend, always good to talk to you.
It was a good time, man. We'll see you next week.